If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Benjamin R. Harrison.
Two of the best in the business right there.
Yeah. I mean, nobody at Paramount or CBS or whatever loves us, but... hey, Adam, I got a big old box here. It says, Care of Jim Shimoda.
You got mail?
You've got mail.
Yeah, it's from listener William in Irmo, South Carolina.
Why don't you open up that big box?
Captain, I'm sorry to disturb you.
I'm receiving a code 47.
Verify.
It is code 47, sir. Starfleet emergency frequency.
Captain's eyes only.
Have you been giving out your address again?
I have. You went and got a P.O. box, right?
I did get a P.O. box for The Greatest Generation.
And so I'm thinking I might... So if you want to stalk Adam, it's very hard now. I'm still very stalkable.
Yeah, it seems that way. You're willing to be stalked. Whatever colored handkerchief is the stalking handkerchief you put in your back pocket, that's the one you're wearing around town.
All right, what do we got here? Oh, man. All right. Got a letter. Adam and Ben, thanks for making the best pod. No one makes a pod like you guys do. You can ask anyone. Yeah, our pod touches all the orbs.
Sure does.
I found these exquisite entrepreneur blueprints at an antique mall in Asheville, North Carolina years ago, and just had to have them. They spent 5 years in my closet. Thought you guys would appreciate them and that they might make good set dressing for Greatest Gen Con 2017 East. If nothing else, you can get the 2 hours of enjoyment poring over them I did before relegating them to the bookshelf to be hidden or flipped around whenever you have company over. Oh man, this is cool. It's like a kind of a cardboard box, but you open it up and it's like blueprint-style maps of the inside of the ship.
Really? Like deck-by-deck stuff?
Yeah, exactly.
And are they blueprint size? Like fold them out on a dining room table size?
Yeah, they are fold them out on a dining room table size.
Wow.
This is cool. Man. They really went deep with some of the merch for this show.
Yeah.
What is our equivalent of this? Like what weird merch item could we come up with that is as like inside baseball as charts of the interior of the entrepreneur?
Man, I think the most inscrutable merch item is probably the scarf, and we didn't even do it.
Yeah.
I mean everything else has been pretty like
our listener Ira did it.
Yeah. Yeah, but like shirts and glasses seem like a merch item that if you do a thing, that is a natural extension of
right.
What you can offer people. Are you proposing that we do something a little weird?
I love the idea of doing something a little weird. I mean, this is this one has two problems, I think. One is that there are so many of them that you couldn't
you couldn't really like hang them up unless you were like really committing to something.
Yeah.
And two, your it's got your classic folding the map back problem where you get one unfolded and it is super challenging to figure out which you know way you're supposed to fold it back up to put it away nicely.
Yeah, yeah.
That said, I love how specific it is.
Did you find the dolphin paddock?
Oh man.
That's supposed to be a thing in those blueprints.
Folks were talking about that, weren't they?
Yeah.
What's it called? Sure. The cetacean studies?
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. There might be 10 blueprints in here, so it would be...
Wow.
It'd be a lot of work to go through them.
You could really wallpaper your office with that.
Yeah, you really could.
Let's do that and see if the wife notices.
There might be more than 10. What do we got?
Wow.
12? 13? Lucky 13.
What a cool and kind gift.
Yeah, thank you. I can't wait to nerd out over these later.
Well, if you have something that's been squirreled away in your closet or office space to keep you from being embarrassed by your friends and coworkers, and you'd like to send it in, you can email drunkshimoda@gmail.com, where either Ben will give you his real address or I will give you the Greatest Generation's P.O. Box address.
I almost always exchange one or two emails with the person before I give up the deets, just to make sure that that they can like hold their story together.
You know? To make sure you're not being catfished?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, I trust your judgment more than mine, I guess.
Adam, speaking of things that you could hang up on a wall, tapestries are a thing you could hang up on a wall.
It's true. It's one of those episodes where they say the name of the episode in the episode.
Yeah.
It's season 6, episode 15. Tapestry.
Now, Adam, we discussed a bit on the last show that our feelings on this episode are not exactly mutual.
Yeah, not simpatico, are they?
Did your rewatch change your assessment at all? Because you were claiming high mountain to apex status for this episode going in.
Yeah, I was claiming apex mountain, the George Washington position in my Mount Nuckmore or whatever. But yeah, I like it no less after the rewatch. What about you? You were pretty meh, knowing that it was coming.
I remain meh. I.
Oh, how dare you!
I stand by this being a vetoable episode.
Oh God!
And I don't want to talk you out of liking it, but
you wouldn't.
I do want to. I do want to have that acknowledged going in. We
right.
start on a kind of emergency six bay scene where they do the beam directly to six bay with Captain Picard, who has spilled a good deal of pasta sauce on his shirt, and another, like a yellow shirt, who's also in pretty rough shape. Worf has Captain Picard in the, like, carrying the bride across the threshold hold.
Sort of amazing to see him like that. Of them like that.
Did you and your wife do that when you got your house?
Yes, we did do that. I was trying to remember exactly, because I remember there being some equivocation at the time.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to do that, and my wife was like, "Eh, that's cheesy." And I was like, "Come on, we've got one shot at this. Let's do it." And so I think she didn't want to, but she did. She did it for my benefit.
That's sweet.
Yeah, I didn't even bonk her head against the door or anything.
Well, there's something very patriarchy-ish about it, but I feel like there's a way to do it ironically that doesn't suck.
That was fully my flavor on the whole thing. And it was also just the idea of, like, you have one chance to do this before that moment is gone. And even if it's cheesy and dumb, Like, I'm willing to do that thing, whatever that is.
Yeah.
To seize that moment.
Yeah. Carpe momentum.
This is sort of a theme to the episode, too.
Mm.
Picard is on what appears to be an extra large biobed, like the California biobed, right? His scale to the bed seems so different than any other person who's ever been in Six Bay before, I thought.
How big is Patrick Stewart? Is he a mini man the way a lot of famous actors are?
I don't know, because I feel like we've seen Picard-sized people on biobeds before, and it is sort of like just a chalk outline of a bed. It's maybe a foot larger than a human figure. But this giant-sized biobed, he could roll over three times and stay on it.
12 yards long, 2 lanes wide, 65 tons of American pride, Canyonero.
I have a king-size bed in my house, and my feet go right to the edge of it. I've never had a bed where my feet like stay comfortably on it.
I am a foot outside the bed sleeper. My feet are always out.
He took it out.
Yeah. So I would prefer that configuration. You know, speaking of domestic things, I was banned from getting a king size bed. Ben,
I tried to help you. I tried to help you in this. I think my wife tried to help you too.
Yeah. Yeah. You are two people who can appreciate the extra real estate of a bed.
And I was like, why is my wife trying to tell Adam to get a bigger bed? What's that about?
And I was like, why wouldn't she tell me about her preferences in beds?
Yep.
Anyway, my wife was like, you will have no escape. I will not even give you the impression that there is one.
Yeah.
You're stuck.
Yeah. That's the thing. I think some people want coupled sleeping to be about snuggling. Other people want to be left alone.
Other people want to be so far away that their feet and maybe their entire lower body to be out of the covers.
Yeah.
So Beverly is going through what in a contemporary medical parlance would be extraordinary measures. Mm. If Picard had signed a do not resuscitate order, I think the medicine might have stopped at some point here. She's really going through a lot to keep him going. She's got the forehead things on him.
Yeah.
She's zapping him with the forehead things. She's scoping the inside of him. And his artificial heart is not helping the situation. It's all fused and sparky.
Doctor, his heart stopped!
Let's get it out of there. We need to zap this, quick! Who's making a potato?
At no point do they take the shears out and cut the shirt off of him, which I thought would have been a smart move given the fact that he obviously has a huge chest wound.
Yeah. That's a level of makeup maybe they were unwilling or did not have the budget to do.
What is
gaping chest wound takes a lot.
This is a ray that he's been hit with that does not damage fabric at all, but damages the flesh underneath that fabric.
Oh, is that the idea? I thought the fabric looked pretty scorched.
Well, it's
melty.
It's not melty. It's got blood coming through it.
Oh, that's all?
I think that's it. I mean, it really looks like he was having some Paschetti and meatballs and made a big mess on himself.
Mom's spaghetti?
Yeah.
We get so little of the story about how this happened.
Yeah.
They were like outside of a conference room.
Mm-hmm. The most dangerous place in the universe.
Yeah, no kidding. Like, I think they really need to rethink this whole conference thing.
Mm-hmm. Your conference
they're all
badge,
wearing dustbusters too, so I think they knew the risk.
Yeah. I feel like if your conference badge came with body armor, that might be a prudent step for the Federation to take.
Is Action Jacket phaser proof? Because that might have been a better piece of gear to wear down there in a potentially hostile environment.
Yeah, I mean he was wearing it on that Darmok planet.
I know. Not knife proof.
Well, he wakes up in the Matrix, and it's the push into face of we're losing the patient.
Yeah,
and like they, you know, they open the aperture on the lens so that it starts to overexpose, and then you know, like he turns around and he's in the on the white seamless stage, and there overexposed in front of him is John DeLancey in the role of Morgan Freeman.
This was a piece of production that I thought a lot about. How they overexposed this scene, keeping John DeLancey so hot while keeping Picard in standard exposure.
Yeah.
He must have been lit super hard.
Yeah. It's definitely like the lighting and not, they didn't like go in and post, because he steps out of it at a certain point and you can see it. You can see the umbra of that extra hot light move onto his face. And he explains to Picard that he's in the afterlife.
Welcome to the afterlife, Jean-Luc.
Pipes seems pretty horrified at his circumstances, because he like goes so far as to reach out to the figure that before he knows that it's Q. He's starting to put together that that he's in some sort of afterlife scenario, and he reaches for him and like recoils when Q shows himself. Not a good moment for Picard.
No. Yeah, it's the Picard eyes to theme.
Yeah, and the Picard eyes happens after John DeLancey delivers one of the great
"You're dead"
lines of dialogue. Yeah. He really gets some gravel in that.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah.
So we come back and we're still in the Matrix, and a couple of racks full of guns comes in from the far distance.
Lots of guns.
And they strap
He's like,
up.
What if I told you I'm God?
Q starts kind of making the case that Picard has died and that he's going to spend eternity here with Q. He conjures Picard's father, who has about three lines all about Picard being a big disappointment.
You call yourself my son, but I just don't see it.
Yeah. Papa Picard, kind of a dick, right?
Yeah.
Nothing's ever good enough for him.
No. That's a very common, like, I feel like that is like the sine qua non of daddy issues in film and television, is nothing is ever satisfying for daddy.
Yeah. Yeah. The pall of parental expectations. Do we ever get to know Picard's mom? Ever?
Hmm.
I wonder about whatever happened to her. I mean, yeah. We know about his aunt, who has the sleeping milk. And I wonder what his mom is like.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't have any personal experience with anything like this. Like, I definitely have friends who have parents who are either demanding or unable to express themselves in a way that is like genuinely positive, but
yeah.
But yeah, like so this is something that we only get like very small glimpses at what Picard's relationship with his family is like, but what we know about it is that he really doesn't get along with any of them that well. Like, and
yeah,
and having his dad pop in to insult him in the first moments that he is in the afterlife, it's got to be pretty rough. And
it seems like Q is attempting to hurt him here.
Q, enough of this.
Enough what?
By conjuring the parents, and then in sort of a ghostly fashion, conjuring the voices of every life Picard's actions have ever taken.
Yeah.
Like, whether intentional or not intentional. And that has to be a lot of fucking voices, given what happened at Wolf 359.
Right.
I have to believe that most of them happened there.
I definitely went to that as well. Do those count to Q? Like, how is Q making the judgment calls on this? Because there've got to be edge cases, right?
Sure.
Like, Wolf 359 is kind of Q's fault.
Yeah. Does Q ever take any responsibility for that? No.
It's, I don't know. It also just made me think about, like, the decision to make a life for yourself where life and death things are a part of it, which is a decision that I've definitely not made. But, you know, like, if you decide to be a cop or a doctor or a politician or, you know, or soldier, you know, like, there's, like, that's such a huge responsibility. And I think that Picard is a character that we have established does not take that responsibility lightly.
No, he certainly doesn't. I mean, this scene also made me think, like, in a way that as a Starfleet captain, you can draw a straight line between your decisions and the lives of others. I mean, I'm not so sure that this scene couldn't have been played with you or me in the Picard position. And every moment, every decision we've ever made, you know, having some sort of butterfly effect on someone else's life. Yeah. Like, we could have, and it's probably a statistical probability that that the yellow light we did not run ended up changing a car's position 10 cars back that 20 minutes later resulted in a terrible accident, for example. Right. Like, we couldn't possibly know the circumstances that we have indirectly created.
It's an interesting thought experiment. Picard is, for his part, is basically standing here rejecting Q as the proprietor of the afterlife, the owner-operator of the Matrix.
If I'm really dead, then my only regret is dying and finding you here.
He doesn't accept that he has to spend eternity with Q, and he's basically, you know, pursuing the same line he always does with Q, which is cut it out, leave me alone.
Wouldn't you almost be relieved if you died and saw someone familiar like Q? I kind of feel like I would. The alternative could be worse.
So Q explains that the heart is the culprit, the artificial heart that Picard famously had replaced by Dr. Pulaski, and in talking about why he has this heart, they retell the story of Picard bar brawling with Nausicaans by showing, like, the young man, the young, like, newly commissioned Ensign Picard fighting Nausicaans in the Matrix.
This is damn exciting stuff.
Yeah, it's a youthful and hairy Jean-Luc Picard.
Yeah, full head.
Taking a really long knife to the chest. It reminded me of the scene of Wesley getting stabbed with the bayonet.
Yeah,
in
also
season 1.
Q episode.
Yeah. Yeah, what is it about that form of death that is attractive to Q?
Yeah, I don't know. Lots of impalements in the Q-verse.
This is a great episode for Star Trek fighting because it is nothing but two-handed punches, like elbows to the chest, flips over the shoulder. Ben, yeah. If there were such a thing as like a strip mall dojo for Star Trek fighting, I would totally take classes there.
Yeah, why the
How
fuck
much fun
the,
would that be?
Why do the Star Wars guys have lightsaber classes and we don't have Star Trek fighting classes?
God, that would be so great. Like, all the punching bags are just really tall.
Yeah. You've got to wear those
flipping over shoulders.
You've got to wear those 12-inch black boots and tuck your pants into them so that they flare out a little bit.
The one thing that the instructors share with any other Taekwondo dojo is always a ponytail. Every time.
Wharf pony, in yep. this case.
I hear jiu-jitsu is really good for balance.
Jiu-jitsu sucks.
Q suggests that Picard could try this all over again, and Picard says that if he had that opportunity, he would play these moments very differently.
Things will be different.
Just then a hand slaps across Picard's face, and he is in a old-timey Kirk movie-era uniform, and he's on, like, a starbase, and a woman has just slapped him and stormed out of the room.
My love is a fever, long until for that which longer nurses.
Did you get a good glimpse of what this dorm was like? Not a lot of privacy, I thought.
Yeah, it seemed like a kind of an open plan, just beds and desks everywhere.
Yeah.
Kind of a deal.
Yeah, slap to the face. Five fingers to your face, Pipes.
Slap! So the camera spins around, and we've got two yuck-yuck buddies from the academy, Ensign Marta Botanides and Ensign Corey Zweller, who is the... What did I write down? Is the world's shittiest Eric Stoltz.
Oh! That's not nice. You normally don't go that hard. You know, Marta should be familiar to you, Ben. Isn't that one of your sign cards? Oh, shit, it's one of mine, isn't it?
Maybe it's one of yours. I don't think it's one of mine.
The 17-year-old J.C. Brandy.
Yeah, UK actress.
As Marta.
She's
got some real Boof from Teen Wolf vibes to me. Yeah. And I mean that very complimentary.
Yeah, this is definitely... This is definitely a lady that's a little distracting when she's on screen.
Yeah. Real nice.
Pipes gets to make out with her, which is really...
a little problematic,
did,
I think.
Did her parents have to sign something?
God, could you imagine?
How does that work?
Totally a minor. Like, oh, okay. It's okay, I'm Patrick Stewart. Pipes sort of goes both ways in this episode, because a little after this, he goes on a date with an older woman. Like, the reason he gets slapped is this girl finds out about this second date. And Ben, this is a major mistake that you only make once, I feel like, is double booking date night with two different women. So he gets the five fingers to the face from woman one, and then he goes out on the date with Penny. Penny, sort of an older woman for for a cadet of his true age at the time.
And he gets the drink splashed in the face from Penny. So he's basically screwed up both of his dates. I wish that was a mistake I had ever had an opportunity to make once. he pretty much deserves it on both counts.
What did you think of... maybe Picard, but mostly Patrick Stewart, playing the reactions to these things the way that he does? He still very much acts as a visitor in his own life.
Yeah.
Like, he is not amused by any of these things in a way that I was sort of hoping for.
I think he sort of has the thing that Troy had in The Face of the Enemy, which is that first walk out onto the bridge where she's asked to play a role that she has had no time to prepare for. She's not sure of herself. And, you know, Q didn't exactly give him a lot of warning about what was about to happen to him. And he's freaked out about it. Like, he's really worried that he's going to be causing some kind of timeline problem.
Right. And it's so strange. Like, they have to... in a way that in so many other episodes, the rules of the game are implied instead of stated. Like, mm-hmm. They go ahead and state the rules of the game. They have to do
some serious exposition to make this one work.
And I found
that despite the fact that they did that, the exposition was really unsatisfying, and I don't think that I would have been satisfied if I were Picard. Because Q's promise is that
I will give you my personal guarantee that nothing you do here will end up hurting anyone or have an adverse effect on what you know of his history.
What he should have said is, you know, I can rewind anything. You know, this can have all the effect in the world or none at all. Doesn't make a big difference.
He levels one of the most withering insults I think he's given to anyone on the show, which is telling Picard that he's not that important in terms of like the space-time continuum, which is brutal.
Yeah. You'd have to think that that keeps Picard up at night after this.
Yeah. And, you know, we're 15 minutes into the episode, and I think it's made clear at this point that this is going to be it's a wonderful Pipes episode.
Oh, Adam.
Captain Picard, this is your Pipes. which is a title so bad it caused you to leave our podcast recording, to hang up on me.
Yeah, the desperate clawing for the ding that you just did there caused my entire internet connection to collapse.
I deserve that. You know, yeah. During the break, I walked outside and yelled at a guy with a chainsaw to stop his work because I was recording a Star Trek podcast. You may, in fact, still hear that chainsaw because of how impotent that request was.
Mm, yeah. That, I think it was last week's shows, there was a guy sanding down the floors in the apartment across the hall from us, and I went to ask him if he had anything quieter he could be doing, which was maybe not the best strategy to take because he didn't have particularly strong English skills.
Oh, no.
And trying to explain that I was recording a Star Trek podcast took me further into the weeds than that guy really deserved.
We should know what embarrassment translates into in multiple languages.
I am the cutest of all. You will assist us. I am the cutest of all. You are all.
Picard has not gone to this bar alone. He gets the drink splashed on his face and turns around and his buddy is there playing Domjot, which has the distinction of being maybe the first time they've come up with a fake game in this show and had it be a game that looks like anybody would actually play.
It looks like a ton of fun.
It looks really fun.
I want to play some of that Domjot.
Yeah, Domjot looks great.
You got people like watching the Domjot, playing the Domjot, putting their quarters up to be next to play Domjot.
Yeah.
Stroke. Like he's playing a violin or something.
One of the guys with the quarter for the next up is one of these Nausicaans, yeah?
The Nausicaans are, the dialogue is written sort of like they wrote English dialogue and then fed it into Google Translate for Japanese and then put it in like Bing Translate back to English.
Play, Domjot, human.
They've got very simplistic English skills. And
big is so often code for dumb on Star Trek, isn't it? Or like,
yeah.
or inarticulate.
They look like they are a hair metal band from the Predator planet.
Yeah.
They're also kind of just a mishmash of other loaf we've already seen. Mm-hmm. I think this is the first time we actually see the Nausicaans, right? Like we've heard about them before, but we've never seen them.
Yeah.
And they've got some pretty intense mouth loaf, specifically.
Yeah, it does not look comfortable. Like, you know, in the way that, like, wearing stage face makeup that includes hair has got to be, like, itchy. I can't imagine what it's like to wear, like, three appendages around your lips and how hard it must be to not, like, pick at them or tongue them or anything.
The PAs, the crafty PAs, probably had to do a lot of runs to Jamba Juice during this shoot because that's pretty much the only thing these guys are going to be able to consume.
You're drinking through a straw for the length of the shoot, that's for sure.
Yeah.
One of the Nausicaans challenges Corsi to a game of Domjot. Corey's feeling great about his recent win. He's like, yeah, I'll take you on, dude. And Picard's like, no way. You gotta give this guy a wide berth. Look at how big he is, and he looks angry, and not only that, they're really sore losers.
Yeah. Did you notice that people applause during Domjot?
Yeah, I did, especially Marta. Like, Marta claps like 20 times.
Have you ever been to a dive bar and seen anybody clap their hands when somebody sunk the eight ball?
Have you ever been the last clapper? Like, I never want to be the last clapper. I've stopped clapping 10 claps before the other people most of the time.
I like being the first clapper, though. There's like a certain risk involved.
Yeah.
Like, can we get this going? You're really going out on a limb there.
Yeah. Marta takes it like there's a clap conclusion and then sort of a coda part to the clap that she repeats.
Yeah. And yet, unlike, say, a Mr. Hollum on on the bridge of the surprise. It's not like everybody turns and sticks their finger in their collar and goes, "Gee."
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so in a way, young redhead Corey, is inspired to keep domjotting.
And young Picard, as played by old Picard, tries to talk him out of it, and it becomes kind of a rift. Like, the shittiest Eric Stoltz does not take kindly to Picard kind of second-guessing a decision like this, and Picard's point is just like, these guys are real ass wipes when they lose. Like, let's not, you know, you're kind of asking for trouble. And he's like, well, I'm an ass wipe when I lose too, buddy.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, when you know someone for so long and you expect them to act a certain way, it's like if Plavim stopped going to strip clubs, Raz would be like, what the hell, man? This is something that we really enjoyed. We used to do it all the time.
Who are Raz and Plavim again?
I don't know. That's not important.
Yeah, that's neither here nor there. Well,
they're
sure
the ones
enough,
putting gas in your car, Ben.
If I had a car, I might have remembered who they were. But so, sure enough, they treat Eric Stoltz like he's Michael J. Fox, and he loses. And they go back and they have like a pretty heated interaction here, right? Like, Eric Stoltz wants to go back and like trick out the table to make for a sure thing of a rematch.
They're hell bent on revenge.
What does it mean?
It means omerta. It means Ray Wango.
Why can't you just let it go? Yeah, they seem strangely focused on the domjot situation, don't they? Like, they're about to ship out in, like, 2 days. They don't want to go out like this, though.
I've played a lot of domjot, a lot of places, and I've never seen the balls roll that well for anyone.
Yeah. Yeah, they want... I think that there's this thing running through this episode, which is that, you know, your personal narrative, how you think about your past is kind of how you think about yourself, how you define yourself, and... That kind of like has major impact on the kind of opportunities that open up in your life. It's kind of the secret, but in Star Trek. And I think Corey has like a intrinsic understanding of this as a young man, and Picard as an old man inhabiting his younger self is much more conservative with the way he plays a situation and doesn't want it to get out of hand.
Yeah, it's old white conservatism, isn't it?
It's, yeah. I mean, these are both Trump voters, but but for very different reasons, you know.
Right.
Like, Corey is much more of like an alt-right kind of guy, and Picard is settling for, because he's the Republican nominee.
Corey wants the statues to remain.
Yeah.
Corey seems really put off by Pipes at this point, but Marta appears to be, I don't know if she's more attracted by it, but she sees this sensitivity in Picard that allows for a conversation she's never been able to have with him before, which is the why didn't we ever do it conversation.
Yeah.
And Picard's like, I don't know, why didn't we ever do it? And she's like, well, we could do it right now. And Picard's like, yeah, why don't we just go ahead and do it? And so they do it, Ben. They do it right there.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
They do it then, they do it there. And
A really titillating makeout scene between a 17-year-old and... I really don't even want to look up how old Patrick Stewart is in this scene, but...
Let's just say 18.
Let's just say a problematic age. Like, if you were to look at Patrick Stewart's driver's license around this time, it would just say age problematic.
Too old!
Yeah, that's a specific thing at the DMV for when you get caught on screen doing something like this.
Eyes blue, height 6 feet, organ donor, yes. Age problematic.
The opting in for donating his organs is cold comfort.
Yeah, he doesn't have a heart to donate, that's for sure.
He wakes up in bed and gets a little loving stroke on his ear and rolls over to find one Q in his captain's shirt rolling around in bed next to him.
This bed is too small, Ben. It's like a double bed.
Yeah. That was definitely like an era though, right? Like when you're just out of college or whatever.
Yeah, most definitely. When you don't know any better.
We had, I think like my parents stayed with us one time recently and we let them use the big bed and we stayed in our guest bed, which is my old full-size bed.
Mm.
We were like, how the fuck did we ever do this?
My parents have a twin-size trundle bed in their post-retirement home.
Sure.
And I can only take it as a feeling of hostility toward visitors.
Yeah, that's more of a, why don't you look into La Quinta in the, yeah, in the nearby area?
Really sends a message, I think.
So I guess at this point also, Corey has rigged the table and is like hell-bent on re-challenging these Nausicaans. So whether or not Picard likes it, the confrontational scene that is supposed to end with him skewered is impending.
It's funny, we hear about this all the time in time travel. Like, it's sort of a trope in time travel movies that, you know, for all of your attempts to change what happens, there's a certain fate that intervenes and course corrects for whatever attempts you make to change it.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a trope. And I think it's less heavy-handed in this episode than I've seen it in some other things. But yeah, like at this point, like there's real chilly vibes between Picard and Corey and Marta.
Yeah, they have a morning after breakfast, Marta and Picard, and she is full on regretting the doing it of the night before. I can only attribute this to maybe the sex wasn't great. But I cried the whole time. Because Pipes' reputation around town as sort of a cad. She might have been a racist. Like, I think she had to have pretty high expectations for what that would be like. She put a bag on my head. And instead, he probably had that old man stamina.
No stamina. Sad. Well, the Nausicaans come in. They challenge Eric Stoltz to one more game of Dom Jot.
Give you a better chance. Give you a bigger stick, maybe.
And they're like about to get in the fight. They're like on the edge of the fight.
They are Andari. Cowards.
Nobody calls me chicken.
And Eric Stoltz like rushes one of the Nausicaans and Picard grabs him and like shoves him incredibly violently back over one of the bar tables.
Almost like jerk cable strength on Corey.
Yeah, like Corey takes the kind of fall that if he wasn't a stuntman, could break your fucking neck. Like,
yeah, and also, where did Pipes get that strength? He's superhuman in this scene.
It's kind of, yeah, but it's kind of like, you can't think of a good reason for the shove to be that hard.
If Picard had hit a Nausicaan with the strength that he shoved Corey across the room with, he'd be decapitated.
They wouldn't have done him the favor of stabbing him in the chest. It would have gone right through the neck, right?
And Corey is fucking pissed. Rightfully so.
He's pissed, but the line reading here is, the line is, I don't know who you are anymore, but you're not my friend. And like, there are a lot of ways to play that moment as an actor. This guy plays it in, like, Christian Bale Batman voice. It's so fucking over the top.
I don't know who you are anymore, but you're not my friend. I am the night. I am the darkness. I'm gonna go serve on the Ajax now. My favorite game is Dom Jot. I had a Dom Jot table installed in the Batcave.
I always wanted one as a kid, but my dad wouldn't get one for the basement. We had a rumpus room and everything. It didn't make sense.
In a way, my father's death gave me permission to make all kinds of strange purchases like this.
Some people would call it a quarter-life crisis. I call it living my best life. So what if I want to eat Lucky Charms for breakfast? It's my choice. It's my body.
I even have a place for the Dom Jot Q on my Batman utility belt.
Are we done?
I think we're done here. You want to move on to P1s?
Just hat on hat on hat on hat.
The end of this fight results in Q congratulating Picard on averting the moment in his life that got him stabbed in the heart. And Picard turns around and he's on the bridge of the Entrepreneur in a blue shirt.
Yeah.
Can I help you, Mr. Picard?
Seeing him in the blue shirt is as striking as it was to see Data in the red shirt. There's something about his complexion that does not agree with the blue.
Mm. I think it's a little better for Picard in blue than it was for Data in red, but it definitely is alarming, and it doesn't, like, yeah, like they have carved such a deep groove in our brains right at this point for what color Picard's shirt should be.
Yeah.
Like when Worf and Geordi switch from red to yellow, it doesn't blow your mind that much.
Yeah.
But at this point we've got, you know, more than 100 episodes lined up of this guy in red. So seeing him in blue is like,
Patrick Stewart does a really subtle thing here after his quantum leap, which is he does not assume captain's posture ever. Mm-hmm. Like his shoulders are never pulled back. He never pulls down the front of his uniform at any point. Mm-hmm. He is very subtly slouched.
Yeah, and he's got a pip and a half, and he's like getting told what's going on by Worf and Data. Data is like, you know, he's like disoriented and doesn't know, you know, what his status is and where he stands on this ship. So Data is like, hey, you seem pretty confused there, little buddy.
Perhaps I should escort you to sixbay. No, I can find my own way there.
He even offers to walk him there, which I thought was really charitable. Yeah, like, this is Data.
Yeah. One of the most humane things Data has done.
Yeah.
And he's an astrophysics officer, so he has been he's been sent back to the age that he was before this little Q adventure.
Yeah.
But to a life path that is marked not by the success of JLP, but by a certain degree of mediocrity.
Yeah. He launches into Six Bay and he's like, Beverly, something crazy's happened. And in Beverly's chair wheels around a doctor smocked Q with one of those giant reflectors.
What seems to be the trouble, Lieutenant Picard?
Yeah, why is Q dressed as 1950s doctor?
Because it's fun. He's just having a little fun.
Yeah, but like, in what context? Like, this is definitely something they had in the costume closet on the Paramount lot, but like, why this for Q?
Yeah, I don't know.
Silly.
He's like, look, Picard, this is what you wanted. You wanted the chance to go back and redo your youthful indiscretions. Well, you've done it, and this is where it's gotten you. And by the way, it's gotten you alive in a way that the other path leaves you dead. So enjoy. Bye.
and that's all Picard needs to hear to think, I need a fucking drink. So he heads down to 10 forward. And before he uh, before he pulls his belly up to the bar, he spots Riker and Troy on kind of like a quasi date. And he's like, oh, fuck, guys, I got to talk to you about this. And they're like, well, we were in the middle. He's like, no, seriously, like, this is really important. Can I sit down? And they're like, well, and he's like, thanks. Listen, I've been thinking a lot about the fact that I'm a lieutenant, and I'd like to, start to think about ways I could advance my career.
Perhaps we should discuss this at your next evaluation.
Observing that, so far I haven't really done much in the, obviously, multiple decade term of service I've had in the Starfleet. And Riker and Troy are, complimentary about his work ethic, but they're pretty hesitant to give a full-throated endorsement of the plan that he's suggesting of, trying to advance himself and become more of a figure of agency.
This is my favorite scene in the episode because it really brings into relief the relationship in a couple of different ways. Like, the way that we know these people and how close they are, and then their opportunity to act totally against that type. Like, for Riker and Troy to be a little put off by Picard sitting next to them, to see Picard ask for career advice in the fashion that he does is shocking. I mean, for a lot of people, this episode is about, regrets in that It's a Wonderful Life sort of way. But, this is the moment in the episode that informs to me that it's about taking chances. And the huge difference, you said this earlier, the huge difference between how other people see you, how you see yourself, and how much of a person's life is about closing the distance between those two things. And this is a moment where Picard attempts to close that distance, and to be utterly rebuffed in the way that he is here is just shattering. It shatters me every time I see it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this is conversely, the scene that I have the biggest problem with in this episode.
I almost spit-take that, really?
Yeah, because I think that this scene, you're right, it gets to the core of the premise of the episode, and I think that the premise of the episode is where my problem lies. I think that this is tremendously insulting to the dignity of having a long career doing something. I mean, there is, we know who Picard is and, what he's capable of. But I think that, I don't know, my mom was a teacher for 30 years, and there's nothing glamorous about being a teacher in the same way that there's nothing glamorous about being a junior grade astrophysics officer.
Oh, but I see what you're getting at. Yeah.
And I think that, my personal bias in life is to try and get people's attention and be the boss. I like being the director. I like being at the center of it a little bit. And it's kind of just, it's how I'm wired, mm-hmm. But I think that this is really something that is a bias in Hollywood, especially, which is that, I think everybody kind of has that to one degree or another. And I had the same problem with La La Land last year. It's a movie about, struggling artists making sacrifices and taking leaps of faith to do what they want to do. And that's a kind of story that I'm really down for because it speaks a lot to my life, except for in this case, it was written and directed by a guy who's 28 and has been a tremendously successful director for his entire adult life. And I just I don't see what that guy has to add to that conversation. And this scene to me, and I don't disagree that it's really well played. I think that the acting and the kind of turning the status of the characters on their head is brilliantly executed. It's just that I think that there is room in the world for people that aren't wired like me and do just want to have a quiet dignity in their lives and don't want to be the the captain.
My interpretation of this was not that there was not satisfaction to be had in a life of quiet dignity. It was that that type of life did not comport to Picard's, into the way that Picard self-actualized himself.
Yeah.
And like, you know, for many, and in fact, for most people are very happy doing whatever it is they're doing, whether it's great or small. But it's the conflict between taking someone out of one stream of life and placing them into another that was so disruptive and terrible. And I guess, yeah, I didn't take it as insulting toward one way of life versus another. It was just that the tension between a man's relationship to the way things were versus the circumstances that he was dropped into.
Yeah, I think that that's... I think there's definitely some validity in that. I
most definitely felt the way you did. Like, there was a moment in this conversation where I was like, let's not insult the astrophysics guys whose work is noble and good and satisfying to anyone who is in that career, you know? So I felt that.
I think that it's a probably a very personal story for whoever wrote this.
Yeah.
Who wrote this one? I don't remember. And a totally valid experience.
The thing that informed my feelings on this scene were extremely personal, though. The discomfort and dissatisfaction I have with my own life and my own ambitions are what make this scene read so strongly for me.
Yeah, I think that it is very hard to ever feel satisfied when you have a strong desire to be somewhere else, and the character of Picard in this very much does, and that's very palpable. And I think that if you read this scene as, it's not about everybody has to be super successful and wield authority over other people to have any value, you know, if that's the way you read the scene, then it's pretty insulting. But if you just read it as like, it's just Picard's personal experience and his sense of where he wants to be and feeling very far from that, I guess I have less of a problem with it.
One omission from this life, this timeline, is that Picard grieves for his career, but he also has no friends. He's lost all of his friends and relationships from his other life. And I wonder how differently this timeline would have played to us as the viewer if he was married to Marta, for example, in a Keiko and O'Brien style loveless marriage, or if he was still friends with Beverly, but their relationship was not as strong, or maybe stronger. Maybe he marries Beverly Crusher. Like, is there anything about this life that would give him a reason to pause his request when he sees Q again, which is basically, put me out of my misery. I can't do this anymore. I'd rather die on the table than live this life.
Yeah. Hard to say.
Yeah.
I think that there's definitely room in this premise for a double episode like that where you really like... go through some versions.
The one place this episode lacks for me is that the decision is so easy for him. There's nothing to stay for. And if he had one little thing to stay for, I think that would have been a really intense choice.
To complicate that.
Yeah.
He like gets in the turbo lift and he basically begs Q to bring him back.
Does it amuse you to think of me living out the rest of my life as a dreary man in a tedious job?
The turbolift doors open and he's back in the Matrix, and he persuades Q to let him like put things back the way they were. So he reappears in the bar fight scene, and it's like right before he shoved his buddy Eric Stoltz. And And in this context, rather than getting in between his friend in the Nausicaan to defend his friend from the, or to defend the Nausicaan from his friend, he steps in between to start throwing haymakers.
Just dropping axe handles everywhere.
Yeah. And this fight is pretty rough. Like, Marta gets like a couple of pretty serious punches to the face.
Yeah.
Eric Stoltz goes flying across the room. Like, Picard is essentially the ultimo hombre on the Federation side of this thing.
It's a real Mike Tyson's punch out, you know, scale between the Federation guys and the Nausicaans. Like, they're really punching up.
Up yours, dude!
Well, you always have to punch up.
I was expecting that moment in the fight where someone jumps onto someone else's back and, like, the big guy just sort of spins around. It's a big versus small fight often ends up.
The Nausicaan goes,
"You merely adopted Dom Jock. I invented Dom Jock."
You can tell that I have just recently seen Alien Covenant, because when the knife goes through Picard's chest, I was expecting like 40 gallons of blood from that.
So Picard wakes up on the bio bed.
His vital signs are stable.
A little unclear whether Crusher has saved him or Q just kind of unfused whatever was fused. Because, like, no further work has been done. You know, like,
yeah.
they haven't cut off the shirt. He doesn't even have the like, things on his temples to shock him back awake.
I sort of got that this was a Q miracle.
Yeah, and he's laughing in the same. It's like the continuation of the laugh from when the spike goes through his chest.
Yeah,
and
meanwhile, the other away team guy who was injured down on the planet is like, can I maybe have a rag or something?
The button on the episode is in the observation lounge. Riker and Picard talking over the near-death experience that Picard had. A very cool, long push-in on this scene where they start like way down, the camera's like way, way down at the other end of the table.
Yeah.
And pushes all the way into a really tight two-shot. Well executed. I think they probably had to like have grips like moving the chairs out of the way as they did this.
Yeah, that was really cool.
It's pretty seamless though. It's like, it's a good floating camera. And, you know, Picard doesn't have any good way of knowing whether it's something that, like, his brain gave him or if it was actually something that Q did.
You know, there's still part of me that cannot accept that Q would give me a second chance or that he would demonstrate so much compassion.
I really like that Picard chose Riker to have this conversation with, too. You only occasionally get a sense of how intimate they are as friends. And I think this is one of those moments. You can't tell just anyone this story. You sound like a crazy person.
Yeah, does Picard have to put this in a report?
Man, I mean, I don't know what Nechayev would do if she read this report.
I'm here to relieve you of command of the Enterprise.
She'd probably install Jellicoe again.
Yeah. Jellicoe's Nechayev's kind of officer, you know?
Riker admits that he wish he had the chance to know this Jean-Luc Picard. Sort of a lifestyle that Riker lives right now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He's like, that guy and I would have been great friends. Tell me a little bit more about Penny. You think she's still around? You think she has the same number?
And if it was Q, I owe him a debt of gratitude.
So, Ben, we know you don't like this episode, but can I ask you where it may fall in the spectrum of the bell curve, if you will, of Mountain to Armus?
Well, that's an interesting question. I mean, this is another episode where I don't feel like it indicts the whole series in any way. Like, my problems with it are very, like, this episode specific.
Mm.
But, I mean, I think that it carries with it all of the weights of the reasons I don't like Q as a character, because I think it kind of... Q as a character is the kind of thing that I don't think works well in Trek.
Mm.
And I think that like exploring the idea of the afterlife in Trek is is something that rarely works for me, you know? I think that they've taken stabs at it in almost every iteration of the series to one extent or another, and I just feel like, you know, I understand the temptation if it's a show about boldly going where no one has gone before and death being the most unknowable thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's unknowable because it's unmeasurable, and this is supposed to be a science fiction show.
Yeah, those are great points. I had the thought a little way through this episode of, like, this was a very Capra Star Trek, and it made me wonder how portable other forms of other genres of film might be when transplanted onto a Star Trek world.
Mm-hmm.
The mind kind of reels, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder if you could start in a place of, like, take the 10 most beloved films ever made, and which one of those stories would be portable enough to make a Star Trek episode out of? I wonder how many of those would work.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it had a certain amount of defending your life vibes to it,
mm-hmm.
Which is a film I really love, and I think a great treatment of the afterlife.
There's also a little bit of "Oh God, you devil" in this too, in a
I don't
fun
know
way.
That one.
As if Q were the George Burns figure of that movie, but yeah, like that's another sort of deal with the devil, replay your life story.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think that end of the day, it falls apart for me on a couple of grounds, but I think that, like, from a technical standpoint, it's very well executed, and there's a lot of fun stuff in it. Like, I don't think its failure is an artistic level. I think it's more on a, like, I kind of have a strong gut reaction against the message of it and my standing Q, anti-Q feelings.
Yeah, that's a hell of a combo.
It's a 1-2 punch in the Mike Tyson parlance. Tell me what you like about this one.
What I like are the feelings that it engenders in me. Like, I know it's a purely subjective viewpoint to have, but this episode makes me think a lot about my own life in a way that I am frequently tormented, you know? I'm constantly replaying the decisions I've made or things I could have done differently. Mm-hmm. And this is an entire episode with people I care about doing those same things. So it really resonates for me in that way. In a way that is, like, not... It's strange, you know? Like, that's not an enjoyable exercise. I don't do it because I like it. But there's a certain degree of catharsis in watching other people do it. And maybe a familiar normalcy. Like, if these exceptional people have, even though they're fictional, like, have the same doubts or feelings that I have, maybe I'm not so far off the right track.
Hmm. Do you want to see if we have any priority ones?
Yeah, let's do it.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message comes from a Canadian, and it is for Adam and Ben. Hey, that's you and me. Ben, the message goes like this. This is a distress call from a Bajoran vessel in a neighboring sector. I've come to book my holidays many months in advance, and you have yet to release dates for Greatest Gen Con 2017. I am paying many scarves to beg you to reveal a save the date to your legions of faithful Borgs on gok.biz/mail.
Wow.
As Wesley might beg Picard from his knees.
Oh.
Oh, that's filthier than I would expect a Canadian to get in a request of this kind.
Maybe he'll write another P1 in to say sorry.
Well, Canadian, I would love to give you more information on the dates and whereabouts of Greatest Gen Con 2017, but to be honest, we're not quite there yet.
We're thinking, like, probably October or November, right?
Yeah, most definitely after the tour that we're planning for August.
Yeah, which is probably going to have a Canadian stop, so...
Right.
I don't know what part of Canada you're writing in from, but...
Canada is big.
It is a big... It is a big place with not that many people in it.
Yeah.
but we will. We're working hard to get that stuff squared away, and we will square it ASAP.
Yeah, we don't intend to keep this from anyone. It's just not finished yet.
Yeah. All right. We have another priority one message here. It is from Jim, and it's to Ben and Adam. Hey, that's us. Goes like this. Yes, another veto and counter veto. I love it. The fact that I believe you when you say there are no shenanigans going on makes it even funnier. That being said, Rascals is the worst. If there's one episode in the whole series to veto, that's it.
Yep. No question.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
Look, we've said it before. I will say it again. I promise on everything that I hold dear, there are no shenanigans involved when it comes to these vetoes. These are spontaneous vetoes.
No shenanigans.
I put shenanigans on my tool belts.
We turned our rumpus room into a shenanigan cave.
Shenanigans is my favorite fast casual restaurant.
I fear shenanigans, so I became a shenanigan myself to strike fear into the hearts of my enemies.
They gave me shenanigans because they knew I could take it.
I'm not the shenanigan you need right now, but I'm the one you deserve.
One thing that I'm not so sure we deserve, Ben, are this constant stream of P1s, but boy, am I grateful to have them. Yeah. If any of our listeners out there have a message to send either us or anyone else, they can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And they are a great way to keep up the production of our program. Thanks, everyone.
Yeah, baby.
Darmok, Angelad, and Tanagra.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below the waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you. Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it. And that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times. And it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them. And that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com and use the code SCARVS at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Drunk
Shimoda! I did. The guy I want to call out is a wordless deep background guy. There's a bunch of scenes in this smoky bar where the Domjot table is.
Yeah.
And you got like one of the dogs from the Fish versus Dog Alien episode.
Yeah.
Shows up in there a couple of times, but I think it's the scene where Picard walks in to ultimately shove his buddy and prevent the fight. There's a guy just like leaning up really in a really awkward way near the door of the bar. And he just looks for everything in the world like a background character from Game of Thrones. It's just like kind of a heavy set, long hair with kind of a Game of Thronesy tunic and a Game of Thronesy beer mug. And it was so fun to think about, like, how does this guy get to space bar from medieval sword fighting land that he obviously comes from?
Maybe he's stuck there like that Tom Hanks character in that movie where he lives in an airport. Like, yeah. He had his visa taken and he can't leave.
Yeah. I just like that guy a lot.
Great background work in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Super fun. Fish versus Dog appears to be getting along smashingly. There's centuries of war having not reached this station, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe these guys are like real chill dudes from each society that ran away and like became pals. Like, you know, like, hey, we're not like those assholes. That's why we left.
Wonder if it's hard to play Domjat when you got three fingers.
Yeah. Did you have a Shimoda, Adam?
Yeah, I'm sure it's a Shimoda that'll make you happy because you really love dumping on this Corey guy. I'm giving it to Corey for another one of his line reading takes. After they retire to the dormitory, after he gets beaten in Domjat by one of the Nausicaans, his take on the line, he was controlling the balls, is very funny to me. He was controlling the balls. Like, he really runs that balls line. Like for several A's, several L's, and an S.
Good times.
Pretty fun. Ben, what do we have coming up? What do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is season 6, episode 16, The Birthright. Part 1, Worf and Data embark on unusual journeys to seek out their fathers. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
As I remember it, this is the, like, Rambo 2 Worf story, where he's got to go, like, find the POWs.
Yeah, it's very much that. Yeah, for all... I feel like season 6 is shaping up to be the daddy issues season.
It's also the cliffhanger season. What do we got, like 4 cliffhangers season 6?
Really getting addicted to that to be continued graphic.
Yeah. Got to get value for that graphic. Excited to see it, Ben.
As am I, Adam. I think that we will have to come back next week and talk about that one. Next week. In a couple of days.
This train doesn't stop, Ben. It's car after car. We could go through all of them.
One thing that's fun to go through week after week is all of our online places where people gather to riff on the show, make more scarf jokes than some people can even handle. We've got a very lively Facebook group, a very lively subreddit, both are Greatest Gen, and we've got the hashtag Greatest Gen on Twitter, where Adam is at Cut for Time, and I am at Benjamin R, A-H-R. And there's also the Greatest Gen Wikia, where you can read up on the genesis of various repeat goofs from this show.
Yeah. You can also send us an email using drunkshimoda@gmail.com. Yeah. And there's lots of ways to support the show, not just Priority One messages. We've got a bunch of merch out there still. T-shirts and glasses. Working on new merch as we speak. We are also very appreciative of the support, the ongoing support that people show to our program at MaximumFun.org/donate.
We should thank Adam Ragusea, who makes lots of custom music for our show, and Dark Materia, who of course makes the theme music. Thank you. And with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, an episode of The Greatest Generation that uses a wide-angle lens to let you know when you're in a dream sequence.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.